Station number 26552, wheel 8.
Mr. Kinnear, Reel 7. We're talking about your time on HMS Kempthorne, early day, but we're just sort of looking at some of the general, your cruising stations, actually, I think they were called. And you mentioned that sometimes you're on lookout duty, but sometimes you were on the bridge on the wheel or helping on the wheel. Now, were you actually on the wheel or were you assisted? Tell us what that duty was about.
No. Originally, I started off as a boatswain's mate.
Right at the start?
You did spells. I can't remember if it was right at the start, but you did spells of different jobs. I was boatswain's mate. And then eventually, I was made the quartermaster. That was when it became an AB then.
Now, tell me about... So, boatswain's mate, that was quite early on. What was the boatswain's mate job?
The boatswain's mate job was to assist the quartermaster. And, of course, if the bridge wanted a message delivering... anywhere on the ship, they'd call the boatswain's mate. Boatswain's mate, go and do this. Boatswain's mate, go and bring this up, you see. And the boatswain's mate had to go down to the mess decks to call the watch, the relieving watch, you see, a quarter of an hour before the watch was due to be relieved. And he'd go down and he'd shout, call the blue watch, call the red watch, whichever watch was due on, you see.
Now, would you also help on the wheel?
Oh, he could relieve you on the wheel, yeah.
What, the boatswain's mate?
The boatswain's mate could relieve you on the wheel.
So tell me, what was it like on the wheel?
It was quite straightforward. You steered by the gyro compass, you see, and the gyro compass was immediately in front of you, and it showed you the ship's head. And you had to keep the ship's head on that particular course set by the bridge. When it rolled very severely, as it did do, of course the ship just veered. It had no control, and you had to throw the wheel over the opposite way, you know, and you'd get some subbies and shout down, "Watch your head!" You know, you had no chance like that. And you'd throw the wheel back over the other side, but it was hard work then. You'd throw it the other way.
What was it like to turn the wheel? Can you describe the wheel?
Oh, no, it turned easy enough, yeah.
So it wasn't physically hard?
Oh, no. Oh, no, you could throw it over, but it was getting it over quick, you see, to get it in position. Alternately, when it was flat calm, you could steer with just one. There'd be a little variation of half a degree, 1 degree, and you could steer with one or two fingers. It's like, oh, no movement at all, you know. And you could keep dead in line, you know, with whatever. If you were, you could be in line ahead. Oh, of course, you had no trouble steering to the course and keeping on the course as was set.
Now, you said that sometimes you'd be on the caboose. I forgot whether it's B or X gun. Was your cruising station with the B gun or with the gun?
No, what you must understand is we weren't always doing the same job. You could do for so many, for the spell of so long, this, that and the other. But I can remember being in B gun.
Now, what were you doing?
This is a caboose, a little compartment where we would all congregate there. Now, we were there ready to man B gun or the hedgehog, which was also forage, you see.
Now, tell us about. Let's take the 3-inch gun first. What was the sort of gun drill on it, and what was your role within the gun crew? When you were on that, I know you weren't on it all the time.
Well, my main gun position, it depended what action station you were at. If you went to action stations, now, if it was surface action station, I manned X gun. That was the after gun. That's on the stern. Now, I was the sight setter and communication number on that. That meant I had the phones on, and I'd get all the orders through from the bridge, and which I would relay to the gun layer and of course the captain of the gun, if I had the gun layer and the trainer. The captain of the gun was the gun layer, and the trainer trained it. And I would alter the sights accordingly, you see.
So was that easy enough, or...?
Oh, well, it was straightforward enough.
And you'd not been into HMS Excellence. You hadn't had any specialist training, had you? Or had you done a course?
No. Only done it at Torpoint and, of course, on the ship itself.
Now, did you find it... I mean, the site set is one of the more responsible positions on the gun crew, isn't it? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Did you find it reasonably easy, or...?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was reasonably easy. The orders would be passed down the line to me by the headphones, and I would say, sweep right, sweep left, so many degrees this, alter the angle to the gun laid and one thing, you know.
And would you actually set the sight or just give the instructions?
Oh, I could set the sights. Yeah, I was the sight setter, but I also relayed all the information, and when we got fire from the bed, I'd hit the gun laid on the back. Because he was just in front of me, I'm standing here, he's there. Bang, I need fire.
And how would he fire it? Was it a foot pedal or a lanyard or what?
To be honest, I can't remember.
Fair enough. No, now, what did you think of the 3-inch gun?
They were rubbish.
Now, why were they rubbish? You know, what was rubbish about them?
Well, for starters, they went off with one hell of a crack. And that's what deafened me, in actual fact. They went off with a hell of a crack. And we weren't in the turret. We only had a little shield round us, so high, to stop us falling over the side. That was all. Secondly, it wasn't us, but it was the Aylmer and another ship. This is later on in the war, when we blew a U-boat to the surface and they're firing at it. The shells were just bouncing off the U-boat.
And when did you lose confidence in the 3-inch? Was it right away you thought it was too not powerful?
Oh, no, we always thought they were a good gun, but that was the killer, like, you know, they were useless.
So you lost confidence in them after that, first you thought they were okay.
Oh, yeah, and of course they were high angle as well, you know, you could use them for firing an aircraft kind of thing, you know.
Now, what about the Hedgehog? Did you ever do duties on the Hedgehog? I mean, what was the Hedgehog like?
Yeah, the Hedgehog was 24 spigots with a bomb on each spigot. And on each bomb, there was a little, how would I describe, like a butterfly. Like these wings, little wings, what's the name I'm looking for? Anyway, that turned... when it went up in the air, that turned, and they reckon once it turned three times, it had a graze fuse. Anything it touched, and away it went. And of course, the whole pattern would go.
Now, were you ever on the Hedgehog crew?
Yeah, but only temporarily.
So, how did you fire it?
Oh, I can't remember that now, to be honest.
What did you think of the Hedgehog? Was that a. An effective weapon. I mean, it was anti-submarine. The idea was...
They were effective, all right. But the only snag was that we had Hedgehog magazines down below with the spare Hedgehogs. We had the ready-use lockers on the deck and we had 24 bombs already on. A pattern. Now, a couple of our ships got torpedoed. And it torpedoed, followed, and the whole Hedgehog magazine blew up. And everything followed of the bridge went. Officers, crew, anything that was there. The Trollope was one. The Whittaker was another one that springs to mind. I'm sure there were more. And as a result of this, they said, they abandoned storage of Hedgehogs down below, only on the ready-use lockers. So in other words, they did away with the magazine. They were effective, all right, but the only snag with that was you couldn't do more than 5 knots, so you're just making the creep and attack.
Now, what about other weapons? Were you ever on any of the anti-aircraft? Erlikon, I presume.
I was never on an Erlikon, no. They had their own regular.
And what about the depth charges? Ever on the depth charges?
I was on the depth charge throwers, yeah.
And tell me how they worked.
Oh, they worked... The depth charge was put in a holder. You've seen the holders, and securing the depth charge to the holder was a chain. Now that fitted into the gun itself, which was more or less a tube, and that went down. You know, it fitted in there, and you secure this toggle on this chain on the main body of the thrower, so that when it fired, it broke the chain, so that the depth charge parted company with the holder, so that the depth charge could sink at the required speed to the depth it was required at. That's how that worked. Now, you had what's the bird I'm looking for? A detonator with a depth setting on one side.
Now, how did you do that?
It was like a big brass key, so big, heavy.
2 or 3 inches, sir.
Oh, yeah. 2 or 3 inches, yeah. Maybe 2 inches. 2 inches, anyway. 2 or 3 inches. And different depth settings. And it depended what depth they considered the U-boat was at.
So that would come through from the bridge to a...
Oh, that came through from the bridge.
So you'd have a depth charge.
Set pattern C for Charlie. That was 50 feet. That meant he was pretty... He'd only just dived. C for Charlie, D for dog. E for easy, wasn't it? Anyway, I think we went up to 550 feet depth in those days, you know.
And this would
and
come
you
down...
Set them, and you had to take that key out and put it in your pocket to prove that that had been set.
And that would come down a voice pipe or something from the bridge, would
that
it?
Would
or,
come down,
or would it be wireless?
No, it would come down. You could hear everything that was going. You could hear it. You were in communication with the ASDIC room, and the ASDIC officer, who was Chopper Dodds, incidentally, he would be saying, give me the orders, sweep left, 5 degrees, that's it, you know. And he'd give the instructions, bearing so-and-so, because the skipper had adjusted the course. And eventually, he'd get the fire. And when the communication was fire, you know, standby charges, that was the first one, standby charges, fire. And a light would come on the barrel of the gun, you know, the thrower, and this lad would be standing there with the toggle, and he'd take the toggle and bang, the way it'd go.
What was it like when it went off?
It was a bang, you know, a good bang, but that's why I suffered burst eardrums, you see. The first time was on the X gun, when the communications failed, and we had to go into gun laser firing. So I took one earphone off. I took the wrong one off. I think it was the left hand. That was it. Took the left hand earphone off, so that I could hear from the bridge if the communication was restored. And of course, the gun layer gives all the orders then, and fire, and bang, it went off, and it's all hell of a crack. And oh, that made my ears, oh, the pain. So I stuck the earphone back on. Now, I didn't know at the time, but that had burst this eardrum. The second time was, I told you about the toggle underneath to detach the holder from the depth charge. And I was on this side of the gun. I'd set the charges, you know, set the the detonator. And then I said to myself, I didn't see anybody put the toggle in. So I bent down, just then the light come on, fire, bang. And I got that full blast in that. So that bust that one.
I mean, how long did it last for, burst eardrum? I mean...
Well, that's always been a matter of opinion, because I didn't know they were bursts. And I was started suffering with my ears. So I didn't report this time. No, I reported sick. I wanted to see the MO on the... I'm sure it was the Keats. So I went to see the MO on the Keats, and he examined me, and he said, something, a Titus median. I said, well, what's that? He said, perforated eardrums. I said, oh, well, how long does that take to heal? He said, oh, years and years and years, sometimes never. I'll never, ever forget those words. Years and years, years, sometimes never.
And did he offer you any treatment?
Just drops and syringe your ears and drops in, and that was it. That was all he could have.
And did he? I mean, how much hearing had you lost? I mean, Well, I'm not quite sure how. I mean, it sounds dreadful, burst ear, but whether you can hear at all, or whether it just gets muffled, or what happens.
Well, eventually, when we come up for demob, we're all getting a medical, and any complaints, you know, and they're missing you through one after the other, thousands of us being demobbed. Yes, I said, I've got perforated eardrums due to the gun blasts. I said, I don't want it to come against me when I get outside. Let's have a look. Normal, normal. I said, well, the air flotilla doctor said it takes years and years and years, sometimes never. Nonsense. They'll open a couple of weeks. Next. That was it. That was the Navy.
I'll perhaps come back to that again, because that doesn't sound too good. Now, we've looked at some of the duties you've had. You know, we're looking at general things, really. We actually got off this from the sea trials, but, I mean, you know, we've looked at a good few of the duties. How did the sea trials go? I mean, were there any problems that they discovered with the Kempthorne?
Yes. They did have problems. We're on watch one night. When I was on trial, still doing these exercises kind of thing. And I think we were on the middle watch. And I said to one of the lads, I'm going to slip to the head. You know, I'm on the after deck with a depth charge crew. I'm going to slip to the head, you know, the toilet. And I went to go for it. My feet went from, I said, what the hell is that? What's all this? And I said, that's all. I got inside the accommodation, because you closed the doors. So when you open the door, you see the lights automatically went off. And he stepped in, closed the watertight door again, the light come on. And he says, what the hell, that's oil. I said, wait a minute, so I stepped out again. I said, there's oil spraying out the funnel. So I got on the phone to the bridge, you see, and I said, there's all the after decks covered in oil. I said, there's oil spraying like hell out of the funnel, you know, so, oh. You and cry then. Anyway, the next day we're back in harbour. That's a good one. So whatever went wrong, I don't know, but something, obviously, one of the burners wasn't burning, and it was spraying out of the exhaust, you know. And because all the after deck, the whole ship had to be painted again then, didn't it? It doesn't take long with this in the States, you know.
So
that was that one. Don't think I had any problems with the guns.
So that's the sea trials. So what happened next? I mean, were you one of the ships that went, well, I think most of them went to Bermuda for the real working up trials.
That's right. We went to Bermuda.
Now, when did you go there?
First of all, we went to Casco Bay.
Oh, tell us about that.
Casco Bay is it's a big bay just below Canada. I think, in actual fact, it's right on the borders. Casco Bay, Portland, Maine, that's it, and it in Casco Bay. And of course, we were there, and we're still doing working up trials from there as well, you know. This is prior to going to Bermuda. And in actual fact, I had my 18th birthday in Casco Bay, and that's how I know that was November the 15th. We were there, so we were there just before I had my birthday. So I was 18 while I was in Casco Bay. And I don't think we were there very long. And then I think we left from there. I don't know whether we went back to Boston, and then eventually from one or the other to Bermuda. And we were in Bermuda in December.
Now, what do you remember of the working up trials at Bermuda?
Well, it was the same. It was drill, drill, drill all the time. Gunnery. The gunnery officers come aboard, they test you on the guns, they test you on the depth charges and everything relating to the ship. And of course, I suppose they did the same with the engine room crowd and everyone else, you know. And we go out and we'd have shoots, you know, it's splash targets and things like that, you know.
And how did the trials go? I mean, could you feel you were getting more efficient? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you had to be. Oh, without a doubt, you know. And of course, we had the base commander, Commander Campbell, if I remember right, and he'd come aboard and they'd carried out these exercises, and he'd say, right, alarm starboard. You know, that alarm starboard meant aircraft approaching, you know. Clang, 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 anti-submarine action stations as well. you know, or any combination of anything like that, you know, surface action, the lot, planes, and you're dead, you're dead, you're dead. Abandon ship, you've just been torpedoed. You'll have to go off the side.
Well, all of you.
Oh, boy, well, apart from the skipper and them, you know, but over the side, yeah. It was like that, you know. But it's all had its purpose, I suppose, you know.
So you felt the trials worked? I mean, they were...
Oh, yeah. Oh, we were good. There was no doubt about it. I used to time you. From the alarm going up, getting on the depth charge throwers or getting on the guns, as the case may be, they'd time you, and you had to be within that time limit, you know.
Now, at this stage, what were you? You were on the... You were still on the X-gun. Well, that was your action station.
My action station, generally, was on the depth charge throwers.
Right.
If it was a surface action X-gun.
Right.
And no matter where you were...
Oh, you were bosun's mate as a cruising station.
Bosun's mate. I could have been bosun's mate. At one stage, I was an acting radar rating. That they called us for... That, you know, they just detail you off. You did so often on different jobs.
And sometimes you're on the B caboose, so the B gun caboose. That
oh, yeah, well, we'd be either...
So your cruising station would be on B gun, but you'd be often assigned from there to the bridge. Is that right, or am I getting it wrong?
No, it could be anything. For a while, I was stationed on B gun, but I was standing by for the hedgehogs, mainly. Alternately, I was bosun's mate for so long. Then I was quartermaster. I was also acting. I was an acting radar rating for a while.
Well, let's ask. But you know, what was it? What were you doing with acting radar rating? Because they had specialist training usually. I mean,
I know they did, but they only had so many. They only had. I don't know whether they had two. And we had to, because you had to have three watches. I can't remember, they only had the one radar rating. And the two of us, I just can't remember now, but it was a terribly boring job. That
so what, how did it work?
Well, you're looking into this little clock face, I describe it like that. And all you've seen was a finger of light going round and round and round. That finger of light looked like a straight line of light, but it wasn't. In actual fact, it went that fast. It was a succession of little signals going out, little dots. And that would strike an object and it would show up as a little white blip on this screen. And of course, you had your range and bearing, etc. on this screen. And when you saw this blip appear, you reported object bearing such and such a thing, you know. The range 500 yards or whatever it was, you know, bearing so and so.
And that was easy enough for you? You didn't even...
Well, it would seem so, but when the ship was doing that and you had a 50-ship convoy, which you couldn't damn well see, you hadn't seen a ship, we brought a 50-ship convoy over from Halifax or whatever the hell it was, I think it was, and we never saw it until we got to Belfast, more or less, because... Of the weather was that bad.
So you'd have to report all these ships, would you? The bearings?
So when they'd come round and the officer of the watch would say, right, so we can try and get a bearing. Sing out, when I sing out to you, give me the range and bearing the need of the ship, the convoy, something like that. And it was one hell of a job to do that, because everything was moving so fast, you know.
Well, sorry. Now, tell us about this first convoy. Anything else happened in Bermuda before...
No, we were in Bermuda for Christmas, and...
Into the New Year, or...?
No, I think we sailed... We were at sea for New Year, if I remember right. But we were in Bermuda at Christmas, and of course, I was boat's crew then.
Tell us
bowman,
about...
Bowman on the... When you were duty, you see, it was bowman on the motor cutter. And all the lads were ashore, going ashore Christmas Day. I'm duty, aren't I? And it was away, motorboat's crew. So we mustered at the gangway of the boat. Right, take the first lieutenant over to this island. Because Bermuda is a string of little islands. It's not just one island, as a lot of people think. And we were anchored off Island then, which was a naval base. Hamilton was the capital. St George's was the old capital, and there was strings of island. It's like, right, where are we going? He says, see that island over there? Head for that. Leading seaman Scar, always remembered him. Right, so the way we crash on, and it was a beautiful day. Because, you know, you're in the tropics kind of thing there. It really was beautiful. We go in there, and I'm standing on the bow, and the water's that crystal clear and smooth. You can see all sorts of fish down below, and you got the impression I'm standing there that you're floating through the air. That's how glassy the water was, you know, now clear. Anyway, we pulled into this little island, and we were taking Mr. Mann to see his aunt and uncle, who lived on this island. It must have been loaded, because they had all these slipways and one thing and another, beautiful cruisers and one thing there. Oh, bring them in ashore, Bill. He said, come on in, have a drink, boys. You know, he was a smashing fella. And, of course, we're all in our ordinary gear. Don't be worrying about that, he said. Get in. You know. So at least we had a couple of scotch off him. You know, he says, sorry, I've got no room. I've got whiskey, I've got this. No bottled beer, nothing, I'm afraid, you know. Oh, anything at all, do you know. So we set off a couple of scotch. And then, because we couldn't stay any longer, we'd have loved to, but the first time, because I was looking at us, you know, and leading seaman Scott, I think we'd better be building back, sir. It might be required. Oh, yes, yeah. When he got back aboard, he said, see the officer steward, make sure he gives you a bottle of beer each on me. Oh, thank you very much.
So they tried to see you right then?
Yeah. Oh, I made our top when we got back aboard anyway. But I wasn't supposed to have a top then, because I wasn't 20 then. But I always got my top. The lads always saw that I got some.
Tell me about the rum ration, as soon as you mentioned it. How was the rum ration sorted out? You know, how was it doled out? What happened?
Well, it was a duty officer of the day, the officer of the watch, whatever. We had what we call a tanky aboard. He was the man that dished the rum out, supervised by the officer of the watch and the duty PO. And usually, in the Navy, we had big, thick mugs. And we usually got a damn good measure in that. It depended on the captain of the ship whether you got neat rum or whether it was diluted and how much it was diluted. Well, we always said the best drink of the lot was one and one. So you got one part water, one part rum. And that was dished out. So it was up spirits 11 o'clock. And the tanky dished it all out. You know, you got it up and then that was it. It was all dished out.
How did he dish it out? I mean, just pour it?
Oh, it was a measure for everyone, you know. Oh, we all got the same, yeah.
And how come you got it when you were too young?
Well, the lads had always saved me something, you see. Yes, guys. And, of course, if you did any favours in the Navy, they'd say, come around in the morning. Right. That meant you were on sippers. If it was a big favour, it was gulpers. And you could have half a dozen sippers, something like that, or you could have a couple of gulpers. And if it was your birthday, everybody gave you a drink. Everybody.
You must have ended up pretty drunk.
Some of them did. Some of them were out for the count, I tell you.
Did you like the rum? It's quite a strong drink for an 18-year-old, 17-year-old.
Oh, yeah. But you really looked forward to that rum. And I've never tasted rum like it since. And it was special rum for the Navy. And when you were in the Western Ocean in the winter, and you said, oh, go down me tot, oh. And boy, once you'd had that tot, that warmed you up, no end, and didn't it give you an appetite? And you'd eat anything, and you had to eat anything them days.
But it didn't get you drunk at all?
No, even
not if you had a normal ration. I don't mean
a normal ration. No,